Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Culture Shift. Today, I am talking to Christine Fulton, a member of a group we both belong, Berkshires in Solidarity with Palestine. And we're talking about a film lecture that will be coming up in Pittsfield this month. It's a film in which the noted Palestinian archivist, historian, and writer Hazem Jamjoon offers a teaching on Palestine at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Pittsfield at 175 Wendell Avenue. It's free admission with donations appreciated. After the film, which is an hour and 20 minutes long, there will be some light refreshments and the chance for informal discussion. So here's my first question to you, Christine. Our group found that the lecture produced plenty of opportunity for discussion. For one big basic thing, it shifts the focal point, doesn't it? Instead of hearing about the so-called Palestinian question from an Israeli or Western viewpoint, we get it from a Palestinian scholar. That shouldn't be such a culture shift, but it is, isn't it? Doesn't it break what the late Palestinian scholar Edward Said described as the Orientalism of Western views of the Middle East?
Yes, I would say that that's probably been the ways in which this one narrative has been able to persist is by silencing Palestinian voices and those that have been talking about this since the Nakba, since 1948. And for years and years, it took finally voices penetrating through to the mainstream media before their cause started to catch on because of the narrative around Zionism that had existed for quite some time before then, and how that tied to sort of European and US imperialism as well. And I think, and I don't want to, I want to let them speak for himself because it's his lecture and I don't want to go into it too deeply, but I think that you know, he starts by drawing a parallel between South African apartheid and what's happened in Israel-Palestine. And he makes a compelling case for those two, for those comparisons, as well as the differences between them. And it is, and this lecture that we're providing on September 16th is predated. It predates the October 7th, 2023 events and what's currently going on. So this has been the longstanding policy of ethnic cleansing and genocide in Israel and Palestine. And I think that this lecture, along with the question and answer after it, offers a perspective that is often that just a lot of people just don't know because of where history started. And so much of history in this country is taught with obviously the awfulness of the Holocaust and the importance of Jewish people being safe. I am Jewish. And so this importance of an ethno state, but there's no safety in ethno states. If the ethno state is coming at the complete genocide of another, then that's not safety.
And that's a good point. I got to say, I'm guilty of not knowing much prior to October 7th. And that sort of cracked open that Pandora's box of history that a lot of people, including myself, were ignorant of. Not now. There's so much there, I'm just beginning to catch up. I've read overviews, I've read books and histories. There's so much there, it's really hard to embed and remember it all. You just got to keep reading and reading. But someone like Jamjoon
has been studying this since he was two. I don't know, it seems like it. And he's just a font of incredible information. And he's lived his life with this history.
I would like to get there myself, but I don't know if I will ever arrive, but I am working on it. And Jamjoon is a great inspiration.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's his liberation that is tied up. And it's all of our liberation, too.
Yeah.
But I think waking up to this reality and what's happened since October 7th has really opened people's eyes, especially with connecting these dots, like realizing that Israel can't be doing what it's doing without the United States heavily involved.
Yeah.
And so realizing we are all complicit, we are all responsible for what's happening over there. And our tax dollars, our machinery, our weapons,
our politicians,
exactly. And so to separate and other as if what's going on over there isn't also here too. It's and you know what, something that we've talked about in our meetings is just a lot of the parallels that between is that we have IDF soldiers that train US cops, some in the state in which we meet. And so
Yeah, and
those
in our neighboring
tactics.
town in Lee, the little cop city going up. I didn't mean to say that. That was a joke. Actually, they're calling it a public safety complex for police, fire, and emergency medical services. They did need to upgrade the facility, and the difference is this is only $37 million, whereas Cop City in Atlanta was around 90. But I'm sure the complex in Lee will have no IDF police training like they did in Atlanta.
And so those
So the
tactics are
rumor.
being brought here, are here. They are already here.
Yes, I believe they are. Here's my next question. Hazem Jamjoom in this teaching lecture ranges across a number of topics, but at the beginning, he makes some very interesting comparisons and contrasts on the topic of apartheid, doesn't he? Between the apartheid system of South Africa and the apartheid Palestine.
Yes, he weaves a tale between the creation of the Bantu states in South Africa as these separate areas where people would be sort of sequestered. I mean, Jason, chime in at any time. In the same way that Israel has done the same thing in Palestine, but to different, or the Israeli government has done the same thing, but to different ends. In South Africa, he implies, and he goes into this in great detail, and I don't want to misrepresent what he's saying, but just that those areas were going to be set aside so that then there would be this labor force available to the minority white population in that country.
Well, he said that's how South Africa built its wealth. They would impoverish these prisoners, and then they'd be starving. So, of course, they'd want to work the mines, get those diamonds out. Or in Elon Musk's father's case, it would be emeralds. Absolutely ghastly.
It's ghastly. It's ghastly. And in the it differs from Israel in that there has been a Palestinian labor force that has been used to do some of the more menial jobs in that society, that have to go through tremendous checkpoints to get to jobs. And you know, and they're it's not, and he doesn't go into that, but the systemic sort of dehumanization and limiting options for people there has been an ongoing intentionality for the past 80 years. And now that has seemed to have, of course, in the case of Gaza, ceased immediately, you know, completely. And Gaza itself has just been an open air prison basically since 2002, 2003. And there is, and so. And he doesn't get into that, but even before, you know, he starts, so something that he alludes to in this lecture is that even as early as 2017, the Israeli government figured out exactly how many calories someone needs to survive, and that's
Oh, I
exactly
know.
how many calories they allow in to the Gaza Strip in order to keep people alive.
Yeah, science.
Yes,
They had
and
it down to a
so.
science,
Yes.
had a, but basically, it's not enough either. The calories are subpar. In June of 2024, Ben-Gvir, Israeli Minister of National Security, ordered prison officials to reduce food rations for security prisoners, aiming at the minimum of minimum required by law, and it was something like 200 calories a day. I think they called it the genocide
Oh
diet.
yeah, absolutely. No, all of this is meant, and that's the point I was making, was just that the idea being that like it is to ethnic cleanse and eliminate the Palestinian state, like that there or Palestinians. And I think that that's what we're, I mean, as we know just now in the past day, it's by 86% of international scholars have now ruled that a genocide is actually taking place, something that we've all known in the public for the past many months. But it is, this was always the intention. This was not about Hamas. This was not about October 7th. This is about the systemic clearing of Gaza and also what's happening in the West Bank as well. in order to ethnically cleanse it of
Move
Palestinians.
everybody into little refugee camps where they will all get viruses and dysentery. And that's one way of polishing them off, too. That is according to Lieutenant Colonel Aguilar, Anthony Aguilar, who claimed to have witnessed barbaric and indiscriminate use of force by Israeli forces against unarmed Palestinian civilians seeking aid, which, according to Aguilar, is part of their Gideon's Chariots 2 operation. He is a retired Special Forces Green Beret and resigned probably because he was just appalled at what was going on. You won't hear that in the news, I guess.
Well, it's
That's.
also, I mean, like, this is, and like, just to draw it back to US imperialism, just because I really don't want to be divorcing us to, like, these are the same tactics that we used on our indigenous population, not we, you and I, but we the white people who came here as settlers and torturing the indigenous people of the Mohican people or the Lenni Lenape people to onto smaller and smaller territories, deny them access to food, to water, to their hunting grounds, to their livelihood.
Trail of tears.
Yes.
Yeah, it's terrible. We do live in an occupational country. What the U.S. is doing now is basically the policy they've always had. You know,
Yes.
we're our thug in the Middle East to do the same thing to the Palestinians that we did, as you said, to the Native Americans. And we
Yes.
haven't made reparations yet.
We have not, nor have we made reparations to African Americans who built this country from the ground up, and we're here from the 1600s. And so
Right. Not to mention the White House.
that when I learned that fact, I was like, what, whoa. And so many universities, Harvard, Georgetown,
Oh,
and I
really?
know that,
Oh, I didn't know
just so many, so much of that. And
that.
so we have, so when I hear, we are all connected in this way, and we are all, and we can be appalled at what's happening in Israel, and it is appalling, it's grotesque, it is inhumane what is happening. And also, this is the way that settler colonial nations operate. This is the way the imperial arm of the world operates, or at least the Western part of it.
But I think the difference between then and now is we get to see everything live stream. The whole 80 billion people around the world are watching this, putting enormous pressure on the event, on the IDF, on Israel, on Zionist policies. And yet it still continues. It's just astounding. I wake up at 4 in the morning thinking of this.
So do I.
Oh no!
So do
Coax
I.
myself back to sleep.
Now, that's why our group has been such a good source. And like, I encourage people to, if not our group and not this event, to start doing this kind of work with their communities if it's something that speaks to them, because it is very grim. Like, it's very hard right now. And the news is really depressing. And being able to come together in community and plan events and also sort of get more and more familiar with Palestinian voices by reading books and showing films and watching this Hazem Jemjum, like, we are, and then those things allow us to go out further into our own personal communities and
And
start
do
spreading that
podcasts.
in podcasts, exactly, talking
I
about
don't know
it.
about you, but when I hear things like the flotilla happening,
Yep.
that's reassuring, but then I worry about them being thrown into terrorist cells,
I
as
do.
Ben-Gvir wanted to do, wants to
Yeah.
do.
Yes.
Now and then you see a tank being blown up, and two things come to mind, which is, well, at least it's not a shoo-in for them. The IOF can't just walk right in and expect no resistance. Does this remind you of Vietnam or what? Tunnels? David and Goliath, guerrilla warfare? Not that it's a team rah-rah-rah thing, but you need anything you can get.
Yeah, totally. And I don't see a lot of the tanks being blown up, but I do listen to resistance reports and try, because like it really does feel it feels pretty despairing with the one-sided violence. That's always been the case with Israel and Palestine, always, always, always throughout history. I mean, I did learn a lot of this history. And was re when I would ask the questions about Palestine, I really was dismissed by Zionists around me. When I was first learning about this 20 and 30 years ago, I was like, but it doesn't make any sense to go to a land where there's already hostilities, like where there's already people and creating this environment. And I was called anti-Semitic, and I was called, for questioning, like then
For
questioned
bringing up the
for
Balfour Declaration.
being up the
That's
Balfour Declaration
anti-Semitic.
and like, and really told, and I'm not, and I am Jewish. And so then I was called a self-hating Jew. And like, so those are, and the, like, there's not a lot of ways to sort of have real conversations about this because people get really entrenched and dug in. And like, that's a lot of where I try, because I really, and we've talked about this in our meetings. I really don't want to other, like, these are 18, 19, and 20-year-old soldiers who are going into Gaza and doing this. Yes, there are reservists and older generals or official officers, but the people on the ground doing this are they're the same age as my children,
I know,
and
I know,
they
I know.
I see these videos and they have lost their humanity. They weren't born this way. They were not born this way.
Well, they were born and then taught this at a very early age. I don't know if you've seen the classrooms where people are, they're actually proud of teaching these young kids how to hate, how to use guns at the age of four. It's just astounding. Do they know what they're doing? I guess the psychology behind that is survival, you know.
Absolutely. I
They're
think the
just
like
trying to survive. They, forgive them, Lord. They know not what they do. That is exactly the case here. They don't know what they're doing. They think they know what they're doing when they snipe kids, but they are robotic. They're like zombies, really. And they're
completely.
suffering on the inside, big time. Chris Hedges talks all about that brilliantly,
And I don't
about
want
how
to.
they go back home and they get into severe depression, PTSD. A lot of them are committing suicide. One must have compassion if you can do
If you can do it, yes. And I'm not, and that's what I wanted to say is I'm not suggesting that the compassion we extend to Israeli soldiers committing genocide is front and foremost, because at the end of the day, people have s refused. People have refused to serve. It's very scary. You have to go to jail if you refuse to serve, and it's not like cush jail. It's jail, and you are, and there are very, very few people who do. Those brave few who do are doing it with the full knowledge that there's not a whole lot of community support behind them. It is expected that people that this is what you will do. And when I've asked people from Israel in the past, like, to what end? Like, this will never stop. Like, to what end? And they, like, everyone has just shrugged their shoulders. Like, no one has an answer. And so, like, there is a just hopelessness to me that I have found among a Zionist rhetoric that, like, this is just the way it has to be, instead of that there are other possibilities for liberation for all, for peace, for reparations, for all of it. It would require a radical shift in society. But how is society serving them now? I've been there. I've been to Israel. People are m miserable. They're fucking miserable. Can I say that? Like, they're miserable. They're so angry. They're so angry all the
Well, that's
time.
interesting, yeah.
I was married to someone whose family came from there, and like I don't see how this defensiveness. I really was married to someone who came who he didn't come from there, but his family came from there. He grew up in London. He didn't serve in the army, and his family came across as like liberal Zionists, people who were interested in a two-state solution that is no longer the case, and I don't think it ever was. And like, it that ultimately did lead to us one of the many factors, but was p literally part of our breakup, because having gone there, I realized it was indeed apartheid, and I couldn't be talked out of any notion, and that is real. And I hope that that and like part of the like my goal in talking about Palestine is to really do that. And speaking to Zionists directly, like, I have been there. It is apartheid. You can't argue any other way. Like, there is no other way to, there are streets that Palestinians can't go down in, Israel 48. There are places that you can't go. Like, there, it is different rules for different people. And anyone who argues otherwise or falls back on this thing, but Jewish people need to be safe, and I say, but not at the not at the
Yeah.
cost of Palestinian lives.
When I first heard they were demonstrating in the streets, I thought, oh my God, they woke up. And I realized, no, they just want their own hostages back. It's not about compassion towards the Palestinians at all. They couldn't care. They could, if they got the hostages back, they'd go on doing what they're doing. It's
Totally. I
not
think it's
about the
like they.
hostages. So we can't possibly cover everything in this Palestine teach-in by Hazam. That's why we hope people will come to the screening, give it a listen, and perhaps discuss it a little bit with us afterwards. But is there anything in it that was particularly resonant for you in the lecture, something we haven't touched on yet?
Yes, there was actually. There was something that I was really, and I had read a little bit in some other books, but just that the efforts that were being made, like he really has a portion at the beginning of the lecture where he talks about how despite these attempts to recruit Jewish people to this area, and it was, this what to this area starting in the 1880s and 1890s to create a Zionist state, like with Herzl and the original people who were proposing a Zionist state. He talks about how that wasn't very successful. Like the numbers, they couldn't get the numbers. And so that even as late as 1947, the numbers there were 33% Jewish and 67% Palestinian. So on the eve of the Nakba, there was still only a third of the country that was Jewish. And that was never a statistic that I had heard before, but like if Israel's intention was to take over the land, then it explains why they had to expel 700,000 people in order to create the numbers that they wanted to create in their land.
Yeah, I like the way he says, well, they couldn't exactly go to England and tell Yorkshire to get the hell out of there.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
We had to find an imperialist acreage and then appeal to the imperialists to give them their land,
Yes.
which happened, especially after World War II. That's what resonated with me is, yeah, as you said, nothing really took off in the turn of the century. It was a failure, and then all of a sudden World War II happened, flooded with refugees. They did have
Flooded
to.
with refugees, but still not enough to displace all the Palestinians there. That's like the, causing a violent pushing out of them. The other thing that I really recall from that time, I mean, like, I mean, obviously, this desire for an ethnic Jewish state is born out of the anti-Semitism of Europe. Like, it was a mutually beneficial project in that the white supremacist Christians or white society of Europe didn't want Jewish people in the society. So having them sent off to this land solved this problem, as well as creating this world that Jewish people wanted of an ethno state for themselves. And so those alignments, because the British were much more willing to work with Polish and Eastern European Jews than they were willing to work with like Arab Jews in Palestine. And
Well, according to Hazem, Britain says, no way. No way we're taking Jews. That's just not going to happen, but we'll find a place for you.
yep, the United
It's
States
just
too.
so anti-Semitic. I mean, the
Yeah, no, all of it.
you
And so,
talk
like,
about
so
anti-Semitism.
all of it. All of it was is anti-Semitic and like and now has become like this outpost, as far as I see it, to the United States, but like it is it, this is all interwoven in that the British also they didn't want Jewish people in England, but they were happy to work with Jewish people at the expense of Arabs in this other land. And like that just it's that's why it's all and the Americans too. It's not, and so all of that being very interwoven in all of this. And that's why like and Hazem goes through it, and there are other lectures that he gives, and as well as like this is very deep ex history and exploring this, like approaching it from so many angles until one becomes more fluent in it. I hardly am, but like just really
Well,
seeing
that's
how everything is tied together. And like, and also just the part about like why, like I think someone asked the question at the end about why doesn't Egypt or some of the surrounding countries get more involved? And he answers because of the US, because they get lots of US aid for not getting involved
Well, but
in
isn't
Gaza.
Bassem Youssef, the comedian? I love
Yes.
that guy. He says
Yeah.
the reason is they didn't kill anybody. So if you hit somebody over the head in the street, I'm supposed to take them to the hospital and bring them back to my house. You did all the killing.
That's true too. That's true too. That's true too. But
Yeah,
as
and
far as like
anyway.
entering, like allowing a humanitarian corridor, they don't. And that's because the US pays them not to.
Right. My big question is, why not Germany? I mean, they're the ones that did it in the first place.
Why not Germany? But Germany's been the
Why
second
not?
biggest supplier of arms.
Isn't that the elephant in the room there? They're the one that needs to do reparations, if you ask me.
To the Palestinians. First of all, Germans is the second largest weapon supplier to the
Right.
Israelis, and it also is gives them a way to like push off their own guilt. The
Yeah.
Israelis are safe. They are fighting back. They have their ethno state. So what we did didn't kill them. And so there's an and I'm not saying that's
Yeah.
all Germans. I know there's like huge German activist community, enormous ones, but that they're the
All
German
getting
government.
arrested, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but the governments, I mean, none of the governments, none of the Western governments are stepping up. I mean, it's places like Yemen, it's places like the Global South. It is, those countries are stepping up and recognizing Palestine. But the Western nations are too embedded with like capitalism and, excuse me, weapons manufacturing, and they don't want this to end. War is good for business, their
Yeah,
business.
exactly. Profits. There's that video of German police kettling protesters into a train. What? No, you can't do that. You can't
Yeah.
put people in trains anymore, you assholes. And then letting them out two stations down or something in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but that sounds dreadful and bad optics as
They're
well.
the
Both.
German police are brutal. They're beating, hitting protesters in the face. Are there no laws? All
The
right.
US cops do the same. They do the same.
Yeah, that's true.
They really do
That's
the
true.
same.
And they're trained by who? Yeah.
Exactly. They're trained by the same people.
Yeah.
It's really been going on for such a long time. It's so insidious, like all the different ways in which these groups are working together. Because it also goes back to surveillance, too. Like so much of the surveillance that's used and being used throughout Gaza, throughout the West Bank, is coming to the is at our borders, is surrounds native, you know, indigenous reservations here in America, and to track people too. And that is dangerous for all of us, like all of this. And you know, a lot, there's the book The Palestine Experiment. Like there is this idea that all these things are tested there to be brought and exported throughout the
Right.
world for nations.
Battle tested. Weapons tested in each war have evidently created a spike in global demand. Gaza is a laboratory of the arms industry. They have these surgical killing machines that are tested on Palestinians, and they have global takers. And also, there's this really insidious microchip manufacturing going on that we know
Yes.
very little about. Spy systems and iPhones using AI. Palantir, the tech mining company, through Lavender, provides the AI for mass murder. Microsoft through Azure Cloud Services. And Google and Amazon through Nimbus. They all supply core tech infrastructure for the Israeli army. And it gives information to the IDF about where people are.
Yes.
You know, when I heard that the Yemeni Prime Minister Ahmed al-Rahawi, when he was assassinated along with his ministers recently around 4 days ago, and then how do they know where he is? Do they have that tracking technology? Surely they must know that if you have an iPhone, there's spyware, iniquitous spyware on it, evidently following your every move.
They killed the Yemen prime minister and all of his
Yeah.
cabinet.
Yeah,
Like, I
yeah,
mean, what do you?
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just this is the
They're
technology. This is the technology that's here. Like, it's not just there and it's our technology. This is it's embed systems and it's Palantir and it's all this information
Yeah,
gathering
kind of
that
too.
are US companies and people in our government,
Yeah.
doing this.
Exactly. Our
And
industry,
it's,
you know.
yep. And
They know
so
where
people
they are. They've
in
how many have
Massachusetts.
Oh yeah, we love our weapons manufacturers here in this state of Massachusetts. Elbit Systems just closed down in Cambridge due to a lot of demonstrations. So, you know, the people have spoken. but we still have Raytheon Technologies, Lockheed Martin here, Northrop Grumman. They're all here. General Electric. Why do they like Massachusetts so much?
There's so many weapons manufacturers. Yeah. And I know that a lot of the, in the more in the central part of the state around Northampton, a lot of the work being done there has been around trying to, you know, disarm and get weapons manufacturers to divest, you know, from people's pension funds and that kind of thing. So I know there's been movement around that. And I really, I mean, that's what I want to talk about too, because there is so much depressing news, is just how much is also going on around the state, around the region, and how many, I mean, you mentioned the flotillas, like it was beautiful to watch all those boats sail off from Barcelona. Yeah. And that more are joining from Tunis and Greece and Italy. And like, it's incredible. It's this has never happened before. And it's their 38th mission.
How are they going to round up 55 boats? Well, they will.
I mean, I'm not that hopeful about their getting through, but it is, people are seeing it. It's a spectacle. Yeah. It is. It does get eyes, more eyes and ears on what's happening, because the mainstream media is keeping this hard line of imperialism, fascism, and genocide as the way to, as the way forward. I haven't seen anything else. There's very, very little, as far as I can tell, in the mainstream media that differs from constantly referring to Hamas and using the past voice in
talking
terms
about
of
Hamas.
Right. I mean, it's just, and like, it's as far as I know from other media that I listen to, like Electronic Intifada, like Hamas has had the same treaty on the table since the very beginning. Give us our hostages. We'll give you ours. Permanent ceasefire. Done. Like,
first aid. Yeah. Food, please, water.
Right.
No, it's not a big ask.
No, but, for people to have agency.
But these flotillas are great, and it's all part of the pressure. And I think Israel is feeling it, as this Colonel Aguilar said. They don't. They're running out of time. That's why they're escalating the bombs and the massacres and just killing everybody they can, because they're running out. They still have time, but they're running out, and they need to get the job done as soon as possible before the world comes crushing down on them. They feel it.
Yes. I mean, something and, that... Go
it's
ahead,
a
go
race
ahead.
To the finish. Oh, my God. It's a race to the finish. Yeah.
Because Zionism has to end.
Yes.
Zionism has to end. The ideology has to end. And like this, because an ideology that doesn't give equal rights to people is not a safe state. It's not a safe place to be. And so... how that comes about, how that land, you know, what that's up for the Palestinian people and people who have attachment to that land, for them to decide what happens. Mm-hmm. But there is no, otherwise there's just war and ongoing this for generations to come.
Yeah. That's the only way Milkowski is going to stay in office. It's constant wars. As soon as the war's gone, he's out.
Yes.
They can't, they hate them, but you can't change positions in mid-war. I don't know why. I don't know why not, but evidently that's something that's not done.
But I don't think they really hate him. You're talking about Netanyahu, right?
Yeah.
He's with his Americanized.
I like to call him Milkowski.
I did too for a while. But our audience may not know. So the I mean, they say they hate him. They do, and I'm sure they do. Lots of people don't, and lots of people separate from not liking him are
they voted for him, didn't
fine
they?
With the policies that he's enacted and committing genocide. It's the same way that there may be lots of people who voted for Donald Trump who personally find him repugnant, but yet are perfectly happy to see him enact the fascistic policies that he's doing. And so I don't, like, given that from recent polls that I've seen, literally 83% to 86% of Israeli Jews support the genocide and ethnic cleansing. They do not, they are not upset about it. I understand arguments about how hard it is and much bravery it takes to speak out. I am confused by that. I don't know what it's going to take for people to wake up, because it's not like at the end of this, all these soldiers go home and they're healthy and well. after
Well,
what they've done and what they've seen.
yeah. What we haven't talked about yet is the propaganda. Does John June bring that up? That's a whole nother can of worms. But they're severely propagandized, as we are here in the United States. And so, I mean, I've gotten into arguments on social media about this, and they say, no, we hate Netanyahu, but Hamas, what are you going to do about Hamas? You know, it always comes down to that.
And that's not really an argument that one can have, so I don't have it.
No,
I'll
it's
push
not
back once. And I
right.
remember I mean, at this point, and this was in the beginning of October, and I mean, I lost a lot of people that I love in this process, besides getting a divorce. I also people who really couldn't, I mean, truthfully, and my ex-husband is still a Zionist, an ardent
Wow.
Zionist.
Well, good
And
for you then.
yes. And my children are not. And but the my children have been very active in this movement, and
Great,
will be for the
great, great,
rest of
great.
their lives. And
Well, hopefully they won't have to.
hopefully they won't have to.
No.
Hopefully they won't have to. Agreed. But like there is a mindset, and there is a clinging to this that I don't see going away anytime soon.
That's
That like so
propaganda.
much of the identity around it is about we must be safe. And there's nothing wrong with that because everybody wants to feel safe, but like penetrating to your safety is not safe if it's reliant on the extermination of another group of people.
Well said,
And
yeah.
I have found very little, I have
Good
found
point.
very few people able to have those conversations, very few.
Really? Oh, that's what Berkshire's and solidarity with Palestine is all about.
Exactly. I think bringing people in so that they start in a very gentle way, get acquainted with a different narrative than they're used to hearing in the mainstream news. I also do know a lot of like, it's more older people our age, Gen X or boomers, that are clinging to Zionist viewpoints that the younger generations have really woken up like radically so. And that like they know that like, there is overwhelming support for the Palestinian cause and for Palestinian liberation, as well as free Congo, free Sudan, free Haiti, free Tigray, free it all. And with radical change, like they lived through the pandemic. They saw that things could, we all did, but they saw that things can change if radically, if they have to change. Governments can take radical action if they want to.
So why do you think the young people, these students, are more enlightened and more aware of propaganda than the older people? What is wrong with us? Or, you know, not us, but what is wrong with them?
Well, I think
They're stubborn. Have they become encrusted with age in their views? But on the other hand, the propagandists know that the first lie that gets out is going to be the lie that sticks. And you can refute it all you want, but people are still saying that Hamas decapitated babies. And it's been
totally.
proven otherwise. People are still clinging to that. It still amazes me. These students who are not able to get jobs after graduating, if they graduate because they've been censured because of their conviction, are awake. Why?
Totally.
Are they smarter?
Well,
I'm
I mean,
beginning to
they
think they're smarter.
I think they are. I
They
think
have
they're
more
smarter in
compassion.
terms of like it seeing the intersectionality of things. I think it's harder when you're our age to realize how much we, especially as white people, have benefited from the system being the way that it is. And they're seeing it as there's not a benefit because if we're all not interconnected, then none that it's based on this.
Good point.
And so I think that
It's like
that's
it's
part of
e
it, especially for white.
economics has a part of it. Like,
Yes.
hey, I've got my house and my car and my retirement. I don't need to do this.
I don't need to do this. Maybe I'll send some money, but that's like, I don't want to have to radically look at my life to see why this is happening. And like,
But
that's what
there's
this movement
also, I don't want to
requires.
lose my job. I don't want to lose my job.
I don't want to
I don't
lose
want to
my
be doxxed.
community. Right? No, people, and like, and people
I don't want to be
have,
ostracized.
And I mean, and like, it's pretty, it is, I mean, listen, like, as someone who, really did stand in this from for a long time is like I lost a lot of people for being anti-Zionist and for
Yeah.
saying this is wrong and for speaking out about it and adamantly. And so there it's people cling to what they know. They also like it's it was it is really hard for people to walk away from their group, from their group of
Yeah,
safety. And for
packed,
some
yeah.
people, like they really have grown up even in religious communities where like it's their family, it's their aunts, uncles, cousins. Like to walk away means losing everything. Like they may lose all financial security, all familial security. And so there have to be, and people are going to have to, in order for this movement to continue, more and more people will have to join. But like that is happening.
Some of the more adamant activists are saying, lose your job. You don't want to work for that company anyway. That would fire you for protesting. Be poor, go broke. Did you ever, when you were losing friends, did you ever say or ask yourself, you know what? I'm going to be nicer. I'm not going to ruffle any feathers. I want my friends back. I'm going to give this up. Was there any temptation? Because I think a lot of people do that. Like, I don't want to lose my friends and clients by speaking out. I know of a few friends who are doing it right now.
I mean, I do have
Remain nameless.
friends. I do, I mean, I do have friends who we like, I don't not talk about it, but they don't engage in it with me, but they are not critical of it. And like for I'm thinking of one friend in particular who whose parents grew up very much in this post-Holocaust world. It's a lot of indoctrination in their house. And while she herself, as a 55-year-old person, believes in a free Palestine, the idea of speaking up in her own family, to her elderly parents, to her, like that's not happening. You know what I mean? It's
Yeah.
not. It's not, she's not going to upend her life in order to go take to the streets or even be part of it. Maybe she doesn't live here. Maybe be part of a group. But like, it is a big step for people, especially when you, I mean, as you mentioned earlier, like the school, like the schooling around it, people are taught really racist things. They're
Oh, yeah.
taught people are the enemy. And like that. All of this requires a certain amount of time, privilege, and like education to access the other, to seek out books, to seek out speakers who can give you the other perspective. And a lot of people are just trying to get through the day. I was recently at an event in Beacon at Binnacle Books, and they I was talking to a Palestinian woman there, and she was saying that she feels like so many people really just are ignorant. Like it's not that they don't care. They just don't know. And that it's getting them to sort of lock in order to get them to care. But like that's very hard in a world that's so noisy, where people have children and people have to get to work and all of that.
But there's so much information out there now. How much of a bubble do you have to be in not to know what's going on? And it's bringing out all the bubbles.
Yes.
It's bringing out all the bubble people. Oh, you're a bubble person. There's this article. I think it's Caitlin Johnstone, who talks about how to deal with friends who don't care about genocide. What do you do? What do you talk about? She said something like, it's okay to distance yourself from them, like you would if you found out they like to torture small animals. But I can't ignore the elephant in the room anymore. What else is there to talk about? The new restaurant that's going up and the old restaurant that's failing? How good the food is while thousands of people are dying of malnutrition and hunger? Can't do it anymore. I can't
I
do it.
can't do it anymore
Not
either.
anymore.
I can't, I mean, I can't, I wouldn't be able to do like there was one time I was at lunch with someone really early on, like maybe October 8th, and I said something about what they're doing is a genocide. And she said, "Don't you ever say that again." And
Oh,
I was like,
oosh.
"I love you. We've been friends for a
Oh.
very long time, but we're done. We're done."
Yeah, well, that's the benefit of wearing social messaging, like a little Palestine map on your chest. You know, it's out there.
Yeah.
Are we
And
going to
so,
ignore this? Are we going to ignore this? Okay. Yeah,
because then we're not
it's
facing
difficult.
reality. Like that for me,
Difficult.
it just becomes that these are people who are not rooted in reality. Like it, they're like when you're talking about ancestral claims to land that go back 2,000 years, when there's
Biblical
people
fairy
living in
tales.
that land 20 years ago.
It's
Like
like
it
the
really, and like that they,
Italians reclaiming Bath.
right, exactly. It's
This
this
used to be
specious
ours.
argument. It's a specious
Yeah.
argument that's made
Yeah.
that like that there's this ancestral and antique like from antiquity claim to the land, and having gone to that land, there are archaeologists who literally do digs in order to perpetuate these myths, you know, that perpetuate this idea that
Yeah.
this land was, oh, this is literally where David was,
Well, it's
literally.
weaponizing archaeology.
Totally, it's literally weaponizing archaeology, and it's
And
done in the name of an ethno state.
it's turning archaeology into fairy tales.
Yes. And when
Yeah.
I went there and saw that, it brings like, I am stunned when I think
Yeah.
about it. And I
Yeah.
couldn't, and when I pressed about it, there was so much deflection, so much, you know, there is no answer because that's exactly what's happening.
Now, you brought up stunned. I feel stunned, angry, appalled, sad, sometimes frightened. And you think you're going mad, but then you realize that's human. If you
Yep.
don't feel this way, you're not human. I'm sorry, you've
Totally.
got something off if you do not feel this way. And I think I'm just reading all this stuff, The 100 Years' War in Palestine by Rashid Khalidi, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine by Ilan Pappe, Mornings in Jenin by Susan Abahawa, to name a few. Reading these books, it's really hard. You tense up, you get angry. All this information coming in that's appalling, but you got to keep doing it. You got to keep. You've read so much, and I think we're getting to that actually. How do you ingest all of this information? I think it takes a certain warrior mentality, if you ask me, because of the pain. You're like, give me the pain, you
I
know?
think that's right, and I that's such a good question, and I really do try to like temper it, you know, first of all, between just like social media going on and getting real live accounts from real life people, and you know, trying to like support the campaigns of people who are actually on the ground and trying literally to survive, individual families. And so that's, and like I do feel like as someone who married into a family who are the occupiers of that world, like I really do feel this personal sense of responsibility around it. Like I can use my ignorance, my lack of education, all of it as an excuse. Like it was all like that's all true. Like I was, but like I'm responsible for that, and I am aware of how I like let answers be kind of cliche stopping for me, you know, instead of pushing more. And so that's why I can say with some like authority that like it's really hard to leave your group. It's really hard. It was really hard for me to step away from so many people because I was waking up to a different reality than a lot of people that I had surrounded myself with. And so the only way to kind of counter that is by diving deep into all the other, I'm looking at my books over here, but diving deep into other books and trying to find community with people who share the liberation of Palestine. Because I didn't want to spend my time arguing with Zionists, like Zionists and the Zionists I know, some of which literally come from that land. Like my ex-husband's family does have some Jewish roots to that land, as far as I know. Not a lot, but some. And so that I but are fiercely Zionist to this day. I like the only way to counter all of that is by doing this work, you know, is by being an opposing force to that this ongoing colonial power, really, for imperial, I don't know what else to call it, settler nation. And so I think like I have a high threshold for trying to get information, and I rewatch things because I don't want to misspeak, and I certainly don't want to speak over Palestinian voices. That's why come to the event on September 16th and listen to Hazem Jamjoum speak from his own words and check out other lectures of his too. I think that the more that we can center Palestinian voices and be like the background that we're providing, you know, doing the organizing to create a nice space, a nice safe space, but that there is an opportunity for their voices to be heard at a time when it's their voices who need to be heard. And so,
In terms of information, I think it's very important to gather information. It can make you more rational if rationality is called for in a situation like this. Sometimes I think it's not. Sometimes I think you just gotta dive in there and scream. But in the end, I don't think that works. I recently saw Gabor Mate giving a lecture, and someone says, "Well, what about October 7th?" And he said, "What about October 7th? What about 2014? What happened in 2014? Do you know?" And the woman, of course, didn't. And he said, "You don't know anything. You don't know anything about Operation Cast Lead." And I think that's very important, knowing these dates as much as possible. I'm giving up my usual reading of pop
Same.
lit, whatever that is. I was a big fan. I record it, and everything is this right here: Genocide Bad, Ghassan Kalafani, Jam June. When I find myself reading The New Yorker, I'm thinking, put it down, man. you're
Me too.
you're
I
not
canceled my
getting info
subscription.
any you're just getting propaganda here.
Totally. I literally canceled my subscription. I mean, I canceled my subscription to the New York Times on October 8th because that was madness. And then shortly after that, and I have been a subscriber to the New Yorker since I was like 19 years
Yeah,
old,
I
a very
know. It's
long
like the
time.
Bible, right?
Right, totally. And I can't stomach it. And there are so many things like that. So many things I've had to go back and like how many ways just these Zionist messages are dropped into things all the time. And so
Softening it all
becoming,
up. I mean, for instance, the New York Times headlines, "Starvation is stalking Gaza's children," instead of "Israel is starving children," or instead of "Israel fires in the food aid crowd, hundreds killed and injured," they write, "Biden says Gaza food aid related deaths complicate ceasefire talks." It's a shameful rebranding.
And it is, and so being more aware of that, and like also trying to be not in people's faces. Another member of our group have talked about that, like when people start talking about the IOF, and then we're like, and also Cop City, like it's all the same. And like some people
It
also
is.
aren't ready to hear all of this, that like it really is so intertwined. And so a lot of the
Who's training the officers at Cop City?
right in like the IOF. And so they, and like a lot
IOF,
of people are, it's a lot of information and it counters a lot of narratives. And for
Well,
people who are already involved in the movement, they know it better than I do. But like there is, you know, talking to people who are more our age, I think it becomes more challenging because they're way more steeped in this other ideology.
Well, you try to imagine yourself being steeped in this other ideology like they are, and it just feels awful. It feels like you're sick.
Sick,
It's like, well,
totally,
I must have COVID or something to feel
totally,
this way. How
totally.
can people, do it? I guess they think they feel better. In terms of feeling worse about reading all this stuff, I think you feel worse. It's like a bitter medicine. You're gonna heal in the end by eating those bitter greens. That which doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. Do you think you're stronger than you were when you were going along with the ideology? I feel like I am.
I just think it makes me feel more aligned. Like I think before I was living, you know, there's this phrase about progressive, but for Palestine, right? And like it wasn't like I was very active in other movements. And when I was in this like liberal Zionist space, we're always questioning it. And like I don't need to go through my own, like we left the synagogue that we belong to because of their Zionist stance. Like there were many, many occasions along the way in which I was waking up. A lot of it had to do with Michael Brown being murdered by the cops in 2014 in Ferguson, Missouri, because that's when a lot of Palestinians started engaging with people who were on the ground in Ferguson, telling them where to stand away from the tear gas. And like that started to get my like interest picked up in terms of like movements building. I studied sociology, so seeing those connections form across nations, across oceans, across movements, and then being connected. And not that I had, but that was another wake up for me. And so like there were many things happening along the way, and then finally, like it was building, 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 and then October 7th just being like, of course, like very much like there was never a day that I was like, ah, this is a two sides thing, whatever. I was already way there, long before there. But
Oh.
the way that I feel about it now, and that's why it's hard to maintain previous relationships, is that I would have to be not myself. Like this is what I believe. Like it's everything that I believe. You know what I mean? That if Palestine is it is if this ongoing genocide isn't stopped, we are all in danger. And that like I am only interested in a time when there is a permanent ceasefire so that there is the ability to rebuild. And like there, if someone is still clinging to an idea of a Jewish state, that has to exist, a Jewish state, like well, there's nothing to talk about. I mean, what do I say? Like, why?
Any exclusivity is apartheid.
Yes, any exclusivity is apartheid. Exactly.
Even if the Palestinian says, no Israelis in this, that would be apartheid too.
And that's not, I
But they're
never
not
heard a
saying.
Palestinian ever
Yeah,
say that
exactly.
ever, 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 ever,
They're
ever.
actually
It seems like the
peaceful.
Palestinians are firmly grounded in reality about what is happening. And there is this constant deflection that happens when talking to Zionists that like rules don't apply.
It's almost as if they're trained to kill since birth. It's like if you're not killing somebody, then your life is threatened, it seems. There's so much fear there, so much terrible self-esteem, perhaps. I mean, you have to have terrible self-esteem to go along with that stuff.
Yeah, well, and also just the army does that, right? I've never been, I don't know anyone in the armed forces. Like, isn't that also part of what the armed forces did, like revs you up to be a killer, right?
Well, if you do you know Israelis? They've all been through it.
Oh yeah, I do know Israelis and I've asked them about it.
I had a friend who I asked, "Did you ever have to use a gun?" And she said, "No, just an Uzi." Like it was a water pistol. Just an Uzi.
Yeah.
And the conditioning is unbelievable. It's like if I had fired an Uzi, I'd be like, "Whoa, that's a major event in my life."
Mean, they do have conscription. They do have conscription.
Conscription.
Like, this is no different than
4,000.
U.S. armed forces going to Iraq, Afghanistan, and now Venezuela, or wherever they're being sent now. Like, and so in this way, soldiers are soldiers are soldiers. And it certainly shows my sort of class privilege here in America that I don't know people who have served in the armed forces because everyone in Israel does. But and like
I
my
know a
you know my
few. I know a few, and I'm sorry, it comes down to economics.
yeah
They're looking for a
yeah
job. They're looking for a
yeah
job. If everybody was economically stable, nobody would be in the army.
no
Anyway,
exactly.
I'm sure I'll be attacked for saying that, but I think it all has to do with economics, pressure. Keep, as you said, class structure is helping wars. We're looking for a few unemployed men. It's
Yeah.
tied to war.
Yes.
So
Yeah, absolutely.
without class structure, we can't have wars.
Absolutely. No, that's
No
why like
one.
all of these are related. Like that's why like ICE is connected into all of this. Like there's you know DSA has been so active in terms of Free Palestine. Also, there's Palestine working groups with DSA because like the workers, like we are all of the like it's the billionaires and everyone else. And like these systems are benefiting very, very, very few. And the few people who are still benefiting from them will cease to benefit from them also. They can't round everybody up.
And I can tell you what also helps with recruitment is Nintendo, Xbox, PS4, war games, shooter games as entertainment, television shows, movies like Top Gun. Hey, it's fun to be in the Air Force.
Yeah, they do a
Isn't
lot of
it
that. That's
cool?
ongoing propaganda all the
Oh, man.
time, right? I
So you're
saw
saturated in it.
saturated. No, and
I'm
I.
guilty. I was like, hey, it must be cool to fly an
Yeah, well, it has a
F-16.
name, propaganda.
I played the F-16 games. I was dropping bombs on countries I didn't even know. Symbolically, of course. I suspected it was somewhere in the Middle East, given all the desert plains, but it was never mentioned by name. The Israeli genocide in Gaza has been going on for almost 2 years now, and it's been an absolutely harrowing thing to watch. An estimated 132,000 children, below the age of 5 are projected to be at risk of death from acute malnutrition. Child malnutrition is soaring in Gaza, where a full-blown famine has been declared. Israel drones are dropping grenades near the United Nations interim force in Lebanon. According to UNIFIL, 36 hospitals have been bombed. The United Nations recorded more than 200 Israeli attacks on schools in Gaza. A total of 241 public schools have suffered severe damage, while 111 have been completely destroyed. 91 public schools and 89 UNRWA schools have been directly bombed or vandalized. 5,479 students and 261 teachers have been killed in Gaza Strip since October 7th. There are 6,500 settlers living in occupied Palestine territories in the breach of international law. The list just goes on and on.
More journalists have been killed than all the other wars.
I mean, it's astounding. It's as if they are trying to commit more atrocities than one can keep track of.
Yeah, I mean, like, maybe we'll lose the thread. I mean, I do wonder about that. Like, there's just so many atrocities. And so how do you eventually, like, looking ahead, like, this will end. This will end one day. Will people be brought to justice?
Hopefully in our lifetime.
Yes. I mean, I know that there are many foundations. There's the Henry Job Foundation that's working on bringing Israeli soldiers to justice.
Right. And something about the activism underway in our area. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of there are lots of groups in the area doing all kinds of cultural events. There's a recent event that I went to in the Hudson Valley. was doing a BDS, which is the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions campaign, and really starting to target stores that they can influence to stop importing Israeli products. There is another campaign that I also recently just heard of today that is
Israeli
also...
projects. Israeli projects also... are products.
Yeah, exactly. Is that another group too that's doing something else, but I want to find it because it was a really good I know where I put it. It is the it's called the No Appetite for Apartheid, which is connected to BDS. It's out of the Palestine Solidarity Working Group, and it's a nationwide network of Palestinian-led organizations that aims to get Israeli products out of stores to begin creating a network throughout major cities. Really, getting stores to commit across the country so that we can use the monopolies that exist in order to pressure them across the country. And so those are, I think, exciting movements that are taking place. And easy access points are ways for people that, like, if you don't have time to go to protests or that doesn't feel right for you, or you're tired in the evenings, a lot of these events are happening in the afternoon where you're going to the grocery store and picking out products that are either Palestinian or definitely not from the state of Israel. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be a small way, because the way that apartheid ended because of, for many factors, but the economic boycott was vital. That was the, breaking the economy is vital to getting change. And if it becomes...
Yeah. It's one thing we can do.
It's one thing we can do.
One small step for mankind.
Exactly. And there's so many cultural events. There's also there's a BDSA open general meeting on September 7th. And that's for Pittsfield. And there's a Zoom link for that. So people could Google that. Interlink Books, which is a Palestinian-owned publisher based in Northampton, Massachusetts. They're having their Read and Resist event on Saturday, September 20th, 2025, from 10 to 4 in Northampton. And so people can check that out. And then there are lots of events. I encourage people to go on to the JVP in their area. There are lots of events going on. So that there are entry points, as well as come to our great event and contribute to the conversation that we'll be in discussing this amazing teach-in by Hazan Jamjoum.
I think All you have
We
to do
also
is
want to
look
provide, go
for it.
ahead.
All you have to do is look for it. It's not gonna knock on your door
Yep.
necessarily. You have to be a little proactive and find out, but it's there. All you have to do is Google it. You have to think of doing it in the first place, and then do it if you want. It'd be tempting to go around knocking on doors, saying, "Come on, do you know about this? Probably not. Come on to the BDS event up in Pittsfield, or join our group. We're full of
I think that
information."
people are, I think people are, it's a growing movement. I feel it.
Yeah.
I do, I still do
Ah,
calls with
yeah.
JVP National, and more people are on those calls week after week, you know, and those calls are mainly focused on just calling Congress people or writing letters to the editor. It's very much at that level. It's not a that, you know, it's online for a half an hour from 3 to 3:30.
Have you done that?
I have, oh yes, since
Yeah.
the beginning.
Yeah.
And so it is, and that's just another like thing that I can do. That's not, I mean, the politicians aren't changing their minds, but at least it's something. It takes it. It's a minute to do it. I get to send an
Politicians.
email.
I tell you,
And
I watch Medea Benjamin's little videos about approaching
yeah.
these politicians and totally showing up what zombies and what heads they are. Beep that out, please. Michael Rooley, Wesley Bell, Lindsey Graham, Steny Hoyer, Josh Hawley, one of the worst, Mike Flood, Congressman Dan Muser, he's a real piece of work, Representative Mary Miller, they're all in the pocket of AIPAC, of course. Those are just some of the few that she totally trashes. They're just
Coward.
monsters. They're ours. We're supporting them with our tax dollars. It's really amazing. But good for her for doing that. If I
Yeah.
lived in Washington, I'd probably be part of that group.
Yeah.
Then again, you can do it here too.
You can do it here. I think
It
that yeah, there's groups that go to the state
it's
capitol and sit. Well,
it's
and like the
really
important was
pointing.
all of this being that the money has to get out of it. That's AIPAC money, that's
Yeah.
the money out of the weapons, like that, all of that going away, which is no small task, but
Yeah.
all of that going away is what then ends Zionism.
Thank you,
That's
Citizens United. I mean, oh man.
yeah, exactly.
AIPAC is evil.
It is
Who said?
evil, and it really gets it hooks into people.
Yeah. Well, what if they offered you $100,000?
I
No,
wouldn't
no.
do it. I wouldn't
I
be a
know.
shell for a Zionist state. It wouldn't be
No, I'd
worth
be
it to me.
signing a contract with the devil, and that's what it is.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, listen, like it's really, it's taken me such a long time to have to reconcile this. I really love, like, I didn't find out that I had, I wasn't raised Jewish. I was raised nothing. And I didn't find out that my grandfather was Jewish until I was in my late teens. And then I did
Wow.
a deep dive into Judaism, but I didn't do it through the lens of Zionism because I wasn't raised in a Zionist. So, like, I didn't go
Yeah.
to Hebrew school. I didn't, like, I just started learning on my own. And then I started studying with a rabbi who wasn't a Zionist. And so, like, he was just teaching me about, like, the
Wow.
religion, which I just really was interested in, like, from the perspective of there were so many rituals that I really appreciated and loved. And there's an emphasis on study and there's an emphasis
Yeah.
on questioning things. And
Talmud.
so many of the prayers you can only say in groups of 10, a minion. And like there's a lot of ritual around grief and mourning and holidays. And it really, I felt like I was coming home to something that I had been denied in my own family because my family wasn't raised that way and something that had been hidden from me. And that's partly because my grandfather, I don't, I, he died when I was very young, but like best, like hid his Jewishness. It was World War II. He was married to my Catholic grandmother and I think was scared and operated not very much out in the open as being Jewish. And so I was very interested in reclaiming that myself and like became very keen. And then when I met my husband who grew up in London but had ties to that land, but was proclaiming himself to be, but yes, I believe in a Palestinian statehood. Yes, Jerusalem should be a combined thing. Like I believed that. I believed that he believed that it was not true. It was not true. It was
You
not
found
true.
out
I found
all too
out
late.
all too late. But then it just became a mission of raising children until I could, you know, make different decisions that are themselves not Zionist. You know, my
Yeah,
children are
yeah.
very, in fact, they now feel really proud of the fact that they are Jewish, that they have been there, and they can like attest
Yeah.
to the truth of what happens there in a way that is
That's
credible.
beautiful. That's beautiful.
And like, and they're using that in their own social circles as listen, we were our family, especially their dad's family, like this goes back hundreds of years of this. Like there's
Oh,
just
sure, yeah.
Jewishness, right? It's like this has been passed down. Jewish people need to be safe. The Holocaust happened. My former father-in-law lived through the Blitz. Like there was a lot of fear around being Jewish
All
in
the
Europe.
pogroms, yeah.
Exactly. All of that.
Which is
All
why Israel started in the first place. Those
absolutely. And so
damn
like all
pogroms.
yeah.
Why? Why did that happen? That's a whole nother book right there. Why did the
Absolutely. And
pogroms
like that.
happen? But it's an amazing and beautiful religion, do you call it? It's got the Kabbalah. Is
Yep.
that how you pronounce it? Or Kabbalah?
Yeah.
Kabbalah.
Kabbalah. Yep.
That is
Kabbalah.
intense, man. If you read that, you got something going on, I think. I couldn't get through it, but I don't know if you've read it or not, but that's
I mean,
part of the
I read parts in my conversion and in my bat mitzvah. I had a conversion. I had a bat mitzvah. I was really, and it's funny because like I'm not religious. We're not, but like we were very, like into like every Friday night we went to synagogue and sang Shabbat songs. Like we didn't go for Sunday morning when it's all the religious teachings, but like we did go like for the community to light candles, to break bread, to to eat a meal with people. Was this really beautiful part of my child, like my children's childhood, and like stuff that we carried on every Friday night for years and years and years, and like those things are so beautiful. And so like when I hear all the stuff around like being anti-Zionist is anti-Semitic, I'm like they're denying my experience of what Judaism is. I am anti-Zionist, and I'm very proudly Jewish, and
Yay.
and it's really it's very hard, not hard like it is to be in Palestine, but like trying to find the right community to voice these things, you know?
Yes, yeah. How many communities are there?
I mean, not many. Like there aren't
Not
very
many.
many like critical mass, especially like
Yeah.
from the perspective of that I really
JVP.
I'm like that going to
JVP.
services.
Yeah.
I'm so, that there's like two synagogues in the country that are anti-Zionist. All of them are standing up
God
for
bless him.
Zionism.
God bless him. I mean, we could go on for another 5 weeks
We could, and
talking
we'll do it
about this
again.
stuff. But that about does it. Don't you hate that
I
phrase? That
do.
about does it for this time. And thank you so much, Christine, for your
Thank
time
you
and
so much.
coming
I hope that
on.
you got good information.
Absolutely. I hope.
Okay, good. I hope so
I
too.
know I did. We've been talking with Christine Fulton, a member of Berkshire's In Solidarity with Palestine, about our next event on September 16th. It's going to be a screening of a film of the London-based Palestinian cultural historian Hazem Jamjoum, giving a teaching on Palestine. I'd like to thank Global Justice Now, a UK group working on global justice that in March 2024 hosted the teach-in. Come out and watch it. Join us afterwards to talk it over. And thank you for listening to BMA Audio Blast's Culture Shift.
That was
Culture
fantastic.
Shift.
Thank you so much. That was great. Oh, I really want to do this again because now I feel like
Yeah.
I would hone better. So like I'm open to it again in the future. That was great.
The first victory in Afghanistan makes the second victory in Iraq that much easier. The second victory in Iraq will make the third victory that much easier to.
Brown University's Costs of War project estimates that America's wars on Israel's behalf have cost over $8 trillion. Do you think that American economy can survive Zionism? Zionism? Zionism?